This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We now know that a car wash partially owned by Sarah Palin failed to pay required state fees on time, that her husband got a DUI 20 years ago and once belonged to the Alaskan Independence Party, that Palin hired a lobbyist to get millions in federal pork projects, that she wanted to know if there was an exit plan from Iraq, and that she does know how to field dress a moose. All of that, her daughter's pregnancy, and much, much more in all in the 5 days since John McCain picked the first-term governor of Alaska to be his running mate. And while she prepares to accept the nomination at the Republican Party convention in St. Paul tonight, the media interest in her is not likely to stop anytime soon. The McCain campaign charges that the media is out to destroy her. So where do we draw the line? Is there a line? What are you seeing in the coverage of Palin? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin in just a moment. We're going to go to David Folkenflik, NPR's media correspondent in New York. But first we go to St. Paul and to Campbell Brown, a CNN news anchor and part of the CNN coverage team at the Republican National Convention. She had an interview with John McCain spokesman Tucker Bounds about Sarah Palin on Monday, after which the campaign canceled Senator McCain's scheduled interview with Larry King. And she joins us now by phone from St. Paul. Thanks very much for taking the time today.
Happy to be here, Neil.
And I saw that interview, as it happens. I happened to see it live. And as I saw it, you were trying to push Tucker Bounds to give us one example of where Sarah Palin had made a decision as Commander-in-Chief of the Alaskan National Guard.
That's correct. I mean, she is a newcomer to the political scene, a fascinating choice. I'm very curious about her, as I think most Americans are. And she is not a familiar face to so many of us, as many of the other people, I think, who are on the McCain shortlist, certainly Mitt Romney, Tim Pawlenty. They were either out there as surrogates for McCain prior to that, or they had run for president themselves, so we had some familiarity. And what I was trying to do is, frankly, educate my viewers and myself about who she is. And one of the issues that I thought was critical to raise with the McCain campaign is experience, because John McCain made that the central issue in his general election campaign against Barack Obama, arguing that there was nothing more important than experience, and I think legitimately making a case that there was a very wide experience gap between McCain and Obama. So if that is the standard, as has been laid out by McCain, then I think it was fair to press the McCain campaign on how their vice presidential pick met that standard. And one of the campaign's talking points that I had heard them relay repeatedly was that she was Commander-in-Chief of the Alaskan National Guard, and they would say that, you know, qualifies as foreign policy experience. That's exactly what Tucker Bounds said on my program. And so as a follow-up question, I asked him to then give me one example of a decision she had made in her role as Commander-in-Chief of the Alaska National Guard, so I would have some understanding of what that meant and how that prepared her. And he couldn't answer the question, and I asked repeatedly, and I think respectfully, to follow up and to have him address it, and he couldn't. And it's my job. I respectfully, disagree with the McCain campaign that interview was in any way out of bounds. I'm just doing my job as a journalist, which is to try to get a straight answer to a straight question, and that's all it was from my point of view.
Did either he or anyone else from the McCain campaign talk to you later about this interview?
No, I have yet to hear from anyone. They've certainly spoken to my bosses about it, and as you know, as CNN has made clear, they made a decision to pull John McCain from a scheduled interview with Larry King that was supposed to take place last evening because they felt that the interview crossed a line in some way. But I think you saw it, and I think it was pretty clear that I was pretty straightforward.
Have you heard from Larry King?
From Senator McCain?
No, from Larry King. Is he upset with
Larry
you?
King, I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. No. Larry's, that's only because Larry's not here with us in St. Paul. Anderson Wolf. I mean, I work for the best news organization in the world, second only to NPR.
Thank you for that.
but you know, it's great. When you work for a great news organization, I'm sure you can relate to this, they back you up, and they back you up strongly, and it's wonderful to have the support of your colleagues and your, you know, bosses in a situation like this.
I think it just demonstrates
a commitment to journalism, which is what we have and what we're trying to do.
I think all of us can understand sensitivity about Sarah Palin's family. Questions about her experience as Commander-in-Chief of the Alaska National Guard. Why do you think they were so sensitive about that?
I don't know. You know, and I can't really speculate about the campaign's feelings about this. I agree with the questions about her family. I mean, I think that's interesting. I certainly relate. I'm a mother myself, and I love the idea of a mother being part of this campaign and part of the discussion and bringing a different, unique perspective to the entire debate. But My questions for her as a journalist have to do with the issues that I think are front and center in this campaign, and that the McCain campaign, frankly, have made front and center, and that has to do with her experience and qualifications for the job.
Well, Campbell Brown, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, Neil. Good to be here.
CNN anchor Campbell Brown joining us by phone from St. Paul, Minnesota, where she's part of CNN's coverage of the Republican National Convention. And let's go now to NPR's media correspondent David Folkenflik with us from our bureau in New York. And David, always nice to have you with us.
Hey, great to join you.
And that seemed to be one of the two stories and events this past week. In the 5 days, it seems like a lifetime, 5 days since Sarah Palin was introduced as Senator McCain's vice presidential selection, that seems to have really set the campaign off.
Yeah, I think there's been enough time where we've all learned how to dress a moose since then. I feel as though, the McCain camp expected a fair degree of laudatory coverage. You were definitely seeing the breaking of a barrier. The first time in a generation a woman was a member of any national ticket, the first time a woman was ever part of the Republican ticket, they expected sort of a glow to attach to this. And the press was caught short. The press was not ready to evaluate this vice presidential pick. And, you've seen real annoyance from the McCain campaign that a lot of questions are happening. They feel that it's because the press wasn't in the know, that the pundits, that the Solons of Washington somehow were not given the heads up and therefore didn't feel like they were part of the gang, this larger establishment in which there's no real membrane separating the media from the political world, and that they knew that Governor Palin would be on the ticket. And there may be some truth to that, but there's also truth that they don't know her record. They don't know her as a person. You know, you saw a senior campaign official from the McCain camp saying a few days ago to the Washington Post that, you know, this election will not be decided on issues. It will be decided on character and who seems to have the vision to lead the country. You know, the press corps really doesn't know Governor Palin's record, and it really doesn't know her character or her nature and her personality. And they're just going to ask every question to see what sticks on the wall as a relevant issue. I wrote about it a bit this morning, and the conclusion I came to as I was trying to articulate this, which that, you know, this is a moment in which everything is peripheral vision and there's no real depth perception. It's not clear for the media yet in terms of which issues are illuminating, revelatory, disturbing, impressive, and which issues are going to end up being 3 to 5 days from now, 3 to 5 weeks from now, being utterly tangential and irrelevant.
If you'd like to take a look at David's article, it's at npr.org in his media circus area. It's called A Full-Fledged Feeding Frenzy on Sarah Palin. And boy, the teams of reporters have arrived in Anchorage and Juneau, and there's going to be pictures of the high school in Wasilla and everything else from here on in. And the first time that Sarah Palin agrees to an interview with whatever media outlet, the first 5 questions you suspect are not going to be about policy regarding Georgia.
Well, I mean, there's obviously the story broke about this 44-year-old appealing young seeming reformist governor is going to be a grandmother. Her teenage daughter, not yet married, is you know, some months pregnant. This is a zone where the press at once doesn't like to be in at the same time seems to delight in. I mean, I've got to say, even in all the chatter on cable networks that were at times tutting the fact that this was had to be disclosed, you saw the picture of this young 17-year-old put on screen, you know, repeatedly, time and again, hour after hour. It was kind of astonishing. You know, one question that pops up from a human aspect was, did the governor recognize in accepting this position on the ticket that her daughter would be put in the media maw like this? But, you know, others are saying, well, you know, this is a governor who, it turns out, slashed funding for unwed teenage mothers in the state of Alaska. Is it fair to explore that? Or is it exploitative of a personal situation that, as the governor and her husband have requested, they feel should be handled with some degree of privacy? You know, as you suggested in your opening question, you know, this is really the story that burst out, that got covered from all sides. It came out in part because there was speculation on liberal blogs that somehow that her youngest child, her months-old baby, the governor's, was in fact her daughter's. Well, it turned out, no, it wasn't her daughter's, but that her daughter herself was pregnant. This was a disclosure that happened on Monday. It was not handled in the way that was optimal for Senator McCain or for Governor Palin. It was, however, done notably on a day when most of the nation was paying closest attention to Hurricane Gustav down toward New Orleans and wondering what would happen there. The McCain camp decided to, you know, sort of flush out a bunch of disclosures, some of them minor, you know, a couple decades old, driving under the influence charge against the governor's husband, a couple of other things that they just wanted to dispense with. And some of these things are still being looked at rather closely and uncomfortably as far as the candidates are concerned.
And briefly, another area of considerable interest is the degree of vetting, how much checking into Sarah Palin the McCain camp got to do. He won the nomination in March. What was he doing between now and then that this seemed to have been a hurried and hasty decision?
Well, and that's right. And you're seeing a lot of vitriol from the McCain camp. In fact, there was within the hour I received a statement from McCain's senior advisor, Steve Schmidt, you know, calling the governor an exceptional governor, record of accomplishment. And then here's what he says about the vetting. He says, quote, "This vetting controversy is a faux media scandal designed to destroy the first female Republican nominee for vice president of the United States who has never been part of the old boys network." And I think they're really angriest in some ways at the moment because there's a question of the reflection on the judgment of Senator McCain.
David, stay with us. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Stephen Hayes, a senior writer at the Weekly Standard, about his take on media coverage of Sarah Palin. And we want to hear your calls as well. Where's the line? Is there a line? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from the Knight Studio at the Newseum in Washington, D.C. Last week, when Sarah Palin met with Senator McCain and members of his staff in Arizona just prior to the announcement of her selection as his vice presidential nominee, she was told that media scrutiny would be unlike anything she'd ever experienced and there was no way she could possibly prepare for it. That may turn out to be an understatement. The McCain campaign now complains the press is out to destroy her. So where do you draw the line? What's legitimate inquiry? Is there a line? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And joining us now is Stephen Hayes, a senior writer at the Weekly Standard. He's with us from St. Paul, Minnesota, and the XL Center, where the Republican National Convention is being held. Very good of you to be with us today.
Hi, Neil. Good to be back with you.
And Stephen, I wanted to ask you, earlier we had Campbell Brown on from CNN. Was that an unfair interview, do you think?
You know, I will say I didn't see it live, but having read the transcript and looking at the content of the discussion, I don't think it was an unfair interview. I mean, I think, in fact, those are precisely the kinds of questions that I wish our colleagues would spend more time talking about. Things like her foreign policy experience or lack thereof, things like the kinds of reforms she's made in Alaska, things like her challenging of the Alaskan Republican establishment. Those, it seems to me, are precisely the kind of things that we should be talking about.
You did complain in your column in the Weekly Standard about the cover of Us Weekly magazine, a tabloid that's published, as you point out, by Rolling Stone's Jan Wenner.
Right. I mean, I think my problem with the way that the media has covered Sarah Palin from the beginning, from Friday morning, has much more to do with the kinds of, I would say, obsession about her family issues and not paying attention to the kinds of things that Campbell Brown was asking about. We have seen in the New York Times, I believe it was in the second paragraph, maybe the third paragraph, Elizabeth Buemiller writing about Sarah Palin's husband Todd's drunk driving arrest in 1986. I mean, I don't care about his drunk driving arrest. I don't care when it was. What do we know about Mrs. Biden's, what she was doing in 1986? It seems to me that that doesn't really matter in helping us evaluate Sarah Palin as a potential vice presidential nominee.
Nevertheless, she was, as governor of Alaska, she brought her family out on stage with her as now de rigueur for presidential and vice presidential candidates. And then we found out that she was not telling us the entire truth about what was going on with her family.
But I don't understand how she would have done it otherwise. I mean, if she hadn't brought her family out on the stage, certainly people would have said, where's her family? And if she had come out and said, I'm thrilled to be the nominee, by the way, my daughter's pregnant, people would have jumped all over that. I mean, I think there is certainly a double standard with the way that the media have treated Sarah Palin and the McCain campaign with respect to how they've treated Barack Obama and Joe Biden. I think the McCain campaign is being asked to answer questions that weren't asked of the other two candidates, and in some cases, as I said, you know, in reference to Joe Biden's wife, shouldn't be asked.
Let's get a caller on the line, and this is Matthew. Matthew with us from Charlottesville in Virginia.
Good afternoon, Neil. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Let me just start off by saying you've always been a very good interview and very fair.
That's usually followed by a but.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that's usually followed by a but.
No, you guys have been fine. But as an observer, I get to listen to both Fox and CNN on my XM radio, so I get to hear it, and it sounds like there's two different countries we're living in. I can flip back and forth and hear the dichotomy between the two stations. And what I've seen is and I call it liberal, call it left-wing, but it seems like there is a concerted effort to be more voracious against the Republicans than it has been with the Democrats. If you look at that, you were talking about how John McCain is not going to be on Larry King. Well, I remember the Democrats boycotting Fox News for months and months and months. They wouldn't even do debates on Fox News.
Well,
and I was just wondering how everybody shores themselves up with that.
Actually, there's news about that we're going to talk about with David Folkenflik a little bit later in this program. But he's right, Stephen Hayes. If you watch the cable news outlets or just listen to them as Matthew does, it does sound like we're on different planets.
No, it really does sound like we're on different planets. And I think that's one of the things that we'll see when Sarah Palin speaks tonight. I mean, you have a Republican base here in St. Paul that is energized and enthusiastic in a way I never thought that I would see them be in this election cycle. You have people stopping me in the hallways to tell me how excited they are about Sarah Palin. And I don't think they're just saying that. I mean, you know, it's, to a certain extent, you come to a party convention, you expect partisans to be partisan. But I don't get that sense from these folks. I think they are genuinely excited about Sarah Palin. And I don't think that many of the news networks, and certainly not a lot of the leading newspapers, are conveying that kind of excitement rather than spending. They should be conveying that kind of excitement or giving people a sense of what this is doing to the dynamics of the race rather than spending all of this time obsessing about, you know, Sarah Palin's husband or her daughter or, you know, when John McCain released this information about Bristol Palin and who is her fiance. And, you know, we're being distracted, and I think we'll look back on this in a couple months and maybe after the election cycle and think that this was a real low period for the media.
Let me ask David Folkenflik, and thanks very much for the call, Matthew. Is this functionally different, do you think, than the coverage of other relative newcomers who we saw proposed as vice presidential candidates? And you think of Dan Quayle, you think of Geraldine Ferraro.
Well, you think of both those things and think back how long ago that is, 24 and 20 years respectively, if this history major's math is correct. If you think of those, you know, Ferraro, there was some initial excitement. And then, as our colleague Ron Elving has pointed out, you know, she really ran into trouble as people started to pick apart her husband's business transactions. And people wondered, you know, how clean, how fresh, how crisp a candidate this was. Ultimately, it didn't matter. Mondale was going to go down as a presidential nominee. But, you know, it it was a problem. Dan Quayle just seemed unsteady and unready on the national stage, even though, as it turns out, he had done a few things. He had done some legislation with Senator Kennedy, if I remember correctly, back that far. He had been a senator for a bit. He just seemed unprepared to deal with that level of scrutiny and attention to fend for questions of policy and of his own personal history on his own without handlers around.
And that turned out to matter either, because they won 48 states.
Well, yeah. So, for example, Steve Schmidt, the senior campaign advisor for Senator McCain, says, you know, the press should be giving – he's trying to blunt it, turn it back on the press, and also – sort of guilt them into turning their sights in a somewhat critical way on Senators Obama and Biden. Biden has been scrutinized a couple of times, in fact, found wanting when he ran for president in 88, and he certainly didn't get much traction as a top-of-the-ticket candidate earlier this year. But, Obama went through some tough stretches in which all of his associations and some of his record came up for real scrutiny. So the notion that Governor Palin she's getting it all in an incredibly compressed time period. It's all happening right now. And as Stephen Hayes says, you know, we'll look back and some of these stories will seem foolish, irrelevant, not germane, and we'll be kind of asking ourselves, why did we pursue all of these leads? The problem is it's not clear 100% which ones are going to turn out to be incredibly vital. You know, you see some stories about her religious beliefs. Are some of them going to turn out to inform her policies as the governor, as previously as mayor of a small town outside Anchorage? Mm-hmm. We don't really know yet. You're still seeing people trying to figure that out.
And Stephen Hayes, one more question, we'll let you go, and that is the first time, I guess, as vice presidential nominee, she agrees to do an interview or agrees to a news conference, and the next time I think the media gets a chance to ask some questions to Senator McCain, would you expect anything else other than a bunch of questions about some of these issues?
No, I wouldn't. And I think, like I said, I think a lot of these questions are legitimate. I mean, one question I would ask of Senator McCain if I were given that opportunity is, you know, why he picked Sarah Palin when she said at the beginning of the surge that she was looking for an exit plan. Now, that's something that Senator McCain used against Mitt Romney to great effect, helped him win the Republican nomination, and now he's turned around and picked somebody who has essentially the opposite view that he held. Now, that to me seems to be precisely the kind of tension between the presidential candidate and vice presidential candidate that we should be pushing on. We should get away from this obsession with, you know, who her boyfriend or fiance is and when they met and, you know, mainstream news organizations running around following, you know, made-up fantasies of left-wing blogs. It's really just a stain on the mainstream media. I think it's going to be a shame, and I do think that we'll look back on this. And there will be, I think it will be more than just a couple stories. I think we'll look back on this episode, and we'll look at this relative to the treatment that Joe Biden got and say, boy, this was really a disgrace.
Stephen Hayes, thanks again for your time.
Thank you.
Stephen Hayes, a senior writer for the Weekly Standard. His most recent article is The Media Has Descended to a New Low. Joining us now from his office in Juneau, Alaska, is Greg Erickson, a columnist for the Anchorage Daily News and the Juneau Empire. He's editor-at-large and reporter for the Alaska Budget Report, and he's covered Governor Palin closely. And, Greg, nice to have you with us today.
Nice to be here, Neil.
And Governor Palin has certainly faced questions from the media in her time as mayor and now as governor. How does she handle media inquiries?
Well, you can look at that question on two levels. Sort of superficial level, she's pretty good. She's pretty open in terms of accessibility. She invites reporters into her office. She rocks the baby while she's fielding questions. And you see her on the street in Juneau with her kids licking ice cream cones, and she'll stop and have a talk with you, as she did with me the other day. In that sense, she's pretty good. In another sense, she's learned in her 20 months as governor that it's a lot easier to govern if you can manage the flow of information, and she's tried mightily to do that in the last few months, clamping down on public records queries and the like.
Give us a specific example, if you would.
Well, a good example is she's very much opposed to the listing of polar bears as an endangered species, and has, in fact, joined in a lawsuit to protest that recent listing. And a member of the public tried to obtain the Department of Fish and Game biologist reports about that. She didn't want those reports circulating, said they were confidential materials. And frankly, it seemed to me to directly contradict the pledges she made during her campaign that all that sort of material should be available to the public so they can make their own judgments.
How does she handle herself in news conferences with the banter with reporters?
She's good. She's quick on her feet. I rarely seen her bobble a question. She's generally well-informed, and if she's not well-informed, she defers to her commissioners or staff. She's pretty good at evading question answers when she feels like it.
Sounds like she'll fit right in here in Washington.
Yeah, I suppose that's a skill that would be in high demand.
And finally, how has the press responded to her? Does she get generally positive coverage?
I think so, although I think the administration itself would dispute that. She has focused in her 20 months as governor on two really related issues related to oil and gas, and there's a lot of criticism of her that she just really neglects everything, has neglected everything else, and you can call this an advantage in that you don't disperse your efforts over a lot of things that you're not really going to have much impact on. And she's been tremendously successful in managing this transformation of Alaska from a state that for 27 years really has been dominated, the politics of it have been dominated by the oil companies. And that's changed during her tenure as governor. And I think she has a lot of responsibility for that, although she didn't do it all by herself. I sort of forgot your question, Neil.
I think you answered it, though, Greg. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Greg Erickson, editor-at-large and reporter for the Alaska Budget Report, with us from his office in Juneau, Alaska. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is Robert. Robert with us from Augusta in Georgia.
Good morning. Good evening, Neil.
Good afternoon. How are you?
My comments are that I saw nothing wrong with Campbell Brown's interview, and I think the Republicans or John McCain is trying to framework it whereas we won't ask the important questions regarding the vice president candidate. I think it's so important that we get out what the history of any candidate, not only her, but any candidate that's going to be running for the most important office, the heartbeat away from the president, we should know everything we need to know about that individual. It's similar to what happened with the going to war in Iraq. The press didn't press the White House enough to the degree to find out whether there were information enough to go to war, and then what happened was we went to war.
Yeah, but to get back to Sarah
Palin. Direction now with this candidate,
Robert. To get back to Sarah Palin, do you draw the line? Are there areas that we shouldn't go into?
Yeah, I clearly think there are areas that we shouldn't go in, and one is, as Barack Obama and of course John McCain said, is the family issue. I don't think that we should be focusing on the family issue, with the exception is if that in any way indicates her judgment, the candidate's judgment in terms of how she governed and how that person in that individual governed. My only concern is that the vice president candidate knew from the beginning how difficult it was with the press, but yet she put her family out there. So I don't think that we should be in the family business, but the candidate should already know and understand, as she was advised, that this was going to be a difficult task, especially with the press. And she and only she knew her history before putting herself out there. And I just disagree with putting her family out there to take the brunt of what's happening to them now.
Robert, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. David Folkenflik, still with us from our bureau in New York. And David, before we leave the subject of media and the presidential campaigns entirely, interesting meeting reported on this week between the Barack Obama and the head of Fox News, Roger Ailes, and his boss, Rupert Murdoch.
That's right. The author of a new biography of Mr. Murdoch, of course, the legendary figure behind News Corp, Michael Wolff wrote in an excerpt in Vanity Fair that essentially Mr. Murdoch brokered a meeting at which he seems both fascinated with Senator Obama, and he also seems a little he doesn't agree with him on everything. Murdoch, legendary for his conservative political views, but perhaps should be even better known for his pragmatism and his interest in good ties with people of power. He arranged for Roger Ailes, the head of Fox News, to be present as well. And Senator Obama, you know, indicated he had wanted very little to do with Fox News. He and Senator Edwards
basically virtual boycott, yes.
And exactly. Boycotted Fox News during the primaries and refused to participate in a planned debate that was scheduled late last fall. And he said, you know, your network has really been portraying me as though I'm some sort of these are not his exact words, but some sort of terrorist, you know, with sketchy ties. Ailes says, come on the air. I promise we'll treat you fairly. We just won't be in the tank like he claims that the other cable networks are. And as it turns out, Senator Obama will be Thursday night on The O'Reilly Factor with Bill O'Reilly of Fox News.
I think people will tune in to watch that. David Folkenflik, thanks very much.
You bet.
NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik, his most recent column on the media circus, A Full-Fledged Feeding Frenzy on Sarah Palin. Coming up, it's one of the toughest assignments around in which the reporter has to give his heart, his soul, and even...
And of course, right now... well, there's so much for that hat.
The shirt off his back. Hurricane coverage, reporters gone wet and wild. Coming up next, stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.